This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 113, Conferences Galore.
Good morning, everybody. This is Phaedra Boinodiris, your co-host for GamesAtWork.biz. Welcome to another show, and I'm joined here by Michael Martin. How are you today, Michael?
I'm doing great, Phaedra, and I'm so pleased that we're here together again. We're missing our other Michael, who is out traveling in a conference in California right now, and you can keep track of him on Twitter and all of his posts on that as well. But we have such an exciting time because you have been traveling an awful lot recently, and you've had a number of experiences that I know I'm just really eager to hear more about, from the Game Developers Conference, from South by Southwest. To share with us, what have you been learning?
So much. These conferences have just been tremendous, and it's just the beginning. There's more to come. So it started, I would guess, with a big conference season, with Big Game Developers Conference out in San Francisco, which was just phenomenal. It was so much fun to see all of my friends and go and look and see what other people were doing. We made our announcement regarding the creation of a game development ecosystem on the cloud, and talking about what that means with regards to modular design of serious games and games for entertainment. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool. We then took that message to South by Southwest, where I was on a panel that was discussing the future of serious games for schools, and what that meant, and what is the business model for that, and how that might be able to work. Some excellent questions by faculty members from middle schools, high schools, universities, colleges, all around the country. Just tremendous. There was the East Coast Gaming Conference out here in lovely Raleigh, North Carolina, our backyard.
Yep.
And that was, of course, just a fantastic show. It is growing every year and just becoming a really, really strong force out here on the East Coast. So great talks there that I heard. The city of Raleigh has kicked off something called their Digital Connectors Program, with a focus on gaming. And they had a panel of students from high schools talking about how serious games have impacted their lives, and recommendations on how games could be used for citizen advocacy. It was just tremendous, just tremendous. And then yesterday, I went to my all-time favorite conference, which is Switchpoint. It's little well-known, and I'm a little bit worried, like, tipping people off about this, because I'm worried.
I'm worried
suddenly there's going to be this – it'll be too big for the town it's in. But it's in this tiny town, a mill town called Saxapahaw, which is right outside of Carrboro, North Carolina. And, you know, you're driving out there and you're looking at your GPS and you're thinking, did I make a wrong turn? I just passed like the sixth cow pasture. And you're driving out in the middle of nowhere. And then suddenly you see all of these black cars with DC plates. And you're thinking, maybe I'm getting warmer. But you go to a renovated mill. Mm-hmm. Out on the Haw River, and it's called the Haw River Ballroom, and this is where the summit is held. And it was the focus of the summit is on humanitarian design, and there were people there from the Global Health Council, from the World Health Organization. It was sponsored by IntraHealth. Folks there from FEMA and from DARPA and from military, but also people who flew in from Kenya and from Nigeria, South Africa. It was just absolutely tremendous. The nature of the discussions on Ebola, on what's happening within the Congo, on humanitarian design and how technology can influence people and the effect of collaboration and just the stories and the photos and the videos people were showing. I was so glad I dragged my 11-year-old daughter because I really wanted her to see this. I remembered it from last year. And it was just so impactful, so well done, just really, really tremendous. I hope you can go next year, Michael.
I do as well. I mean, I'm looking through the agenda for what's happening this afternoon and wish I were in the ballroom in Saxapahaw Hall myself. there's one by Wayan Vota to talk about, are you ready for the mobile and sensor revolution? And my thinking around this is when you are looking at all the ways that we can interact with the environment now and with all the sensors that are available to us, the realm of gaming and the way of making use of all that information for game and then learning and health and other purposes is just about to just really starburst here, isn't it?
Most assuredly. And that was really the focus of the conversation. Well, not just gaming, but also, as you say, mobile and tech, but also there was a lot of great discussions about artivism and poetry. So it was just this real sprinkling, just this really diverse set of topics by phenomenal speakers. And also what they do. Each speaker has about 15 minutes to talk, and then there's workshops that last for about an hour where you get to do deeper dives, and it's much more interactive. I held a workshop with a wonderful individual from Nigeria who had been working on a game, mobile game, that was meant to teach teens about AIDS. Mm-hmm. And safe sex. And so we did a workshop where we wanted to put people through their paces of what it's like to really think about your audience. You know, the very first steps of any really good game design is thinking about your audience and, do a gamer profile and a journey map.
Right.
So we were brainstorming before our workshop and we were trying to think about, what would this topic be? So we were recalling that back in February, President Obama gave a summit talking about the recruitment of American teens by ISIS. And he really had this think tank and brainstorming session about ways to address this and how to approach this with empathy and with respect, but really how do we address this? So we focused our design session specifically on what would a game look like that would be able to influence teens to not choose that path. And, we were a little bit nervous at first, like, okay, how well is this going to go over? And we made sure to underscore, empathy and respect and really think about these American teens and what is going on in their lives. And it was just tremendous. People got really, really into it. They got really into just trying to understand, trying to get under their skins, really figure out what this might mean. And then with the journey map, and just thinking about what is their day like and how might the game, what are the goals of the game, crystallizing the demographic and then thinking about how these kids might be able to interact with the game and how it might be able to start slowly influencing their decisions and changing their lives. And it was wonderful. It was just wonderful to see what these teams were coming up with and some of their ideas. It was a whole lot of fun.
Wow. So, I mean, those are two pretty weighty topics, right? So AIDS, understanding, education, awareness, avoidance, and similarly so to avoid being recruited to be part of an army or something that is not consistent with the values here. I'm curious to know what sort of ideas began to emerge to help influence these teams and move them in the direction that we would hope they would move.
There was a lot of discussion about pop culture. Uh-huh. And just how powerful pop culture can be. And it was reminding me, listening to the teams about Neil deGrasse Tyson and yep. The presenter for Cosmos, not the presenter. What's the word I'm looking for? The host of Cosmos. And so, and he was, he said the same thing, that through leveraging pop culture, he has been able to make science cool again. Right. Mm-hmm. And the same sort of thing with relaying of messages. How is it that you might be able to think of what's going on in these teens' lives? What are the stressors that they have in their lives? Because what we have read is that they're typically new converts into Islam, that typically their family is not Muslim, and that they are unemployed, undereducated, and the way that the marketing is happening is via relaying. They're targeting mainly women, female, you American teens, and they're saying, we're going to teach you cooking and sewing, but also the use of weapons, which I thought was interesting. So just, you know, getting into their heads and thinking, okay, you know, merge these messages of, you know, coming and belonging to this family, this community, and we're going to train you and give you a sense of purpose. How is it that you can really shine a light on that, re-swizzle it, maybe through stories? Or, you know, there was a discussion about use of graphic novels, for example. Mm-hmm. And really just being able to talk more about the Muslim religion and what it really means. And also connecting them to leaders within the Muslim religion here in the U.S. who might be able to teach them more about the basic teachings of Islam and how it's being co-opted. Just, it's really, really interesting. The use of social media and Facebook and how you can use the game to teach them to mentor others. Just interesting. Wow. And I think it definitely got a lot of ideas sparking.
Yeah, well, you know, as parents of teenagers and soon to be teenagers, you know, this is very much one of the things that's at our heart of what are we doing? How are we going to be able to be successful in conveying our values and helping them shape their own values while being their own person? And, I there's plenty of intriguing things that are available out between YouTube and other storytelling that exists today. And because it is coming from a perceived authoritative source, it tends to be believed. So this is a very, you know, sort of a counter structure that say, okay, well, here's another authoritative source that may have a different perspective than the first one you were looking at. And how do you begin to internalize and understand all that while your brain is still growing, right?
Agreed. It was very interesting.
You'd said that you'd done another workshop at the University of North Carolina at the entrepreneurship and tech class that had some similar characteristics too.
Yes, Michael Fern is the professor of that class, and he wanted to hold a workshop around a board game that was created by an Israeli company called Fresh Biz. And the focus, of course, is on the new entrepreneurial thinking, right? So what does it mean to be a social entrepreneur? What does it mean to collaborate as an entrepreneur, not in as much a competitive manner, but in a collaborative manner? And I've got to tell you, it was really mind-blowing. It's not at all what one might expect. We played it separately before the workshop. And because we had such a positive experience, he made it a much bigger deal and he went after sponsors. So Cisco was there, Fidelity was there, IBM was there, all as sponsors of the event. Mm-hmm. So there are a bunch of people there from those companies, but also a lot of students from both UNC and NC State, a bunch of other professors came to witness. And it was phenomenal because the base premise of the game was that you're at a table with about four or five other players, and to win, you all have to win within an hour. So within an hour, you all have to get to, you know, the winning spot on the other side of the board. And even though you know this, you know that you all have to win in order to win, you still start off playing the game holding up your cards close to your chest as if, you know, like, I don't want others to see what my action cards are. And then it slowly dawns on you, like, oh, wait a minute, we can actually share these so that we can all win. It was really interesting. It's much deeper than I'm giving it credit for via my words. You really do have to experience it. But we loved it. And just to give you a sense as to how impactful it was,
yes.
I was overhearing some of the employees of the other companies going up to the founders afterwards and saying, can you host a session like this over here so that our executive management can learn from this? Because it's basically, shining the light on the importance of Wild Ducks, the importance of innovation, the importance of cross collaboration, mm-hmm. and really leveraging action cards, because they were making the point of saying there's a lot of resources. We've really got unlimited resources in this day and age. It's just a question of networking, collaborating, and asking. So it was really interesting. I enjoyed it very much.
It's funny. I can draw so many parallels from what you've just described to day-to-day activities that I find myself in too. And you're right. It really is your network, and there are situations where help is needed on the other side of the planet to accomplish a task, and people are frustrated and they can't do it. And you happen to know the right people, and you make a phone call and you make a connection. And what was perceived 15 minutes earlier as an insurmountable obstacle is now a collaborative experience to go solve the business problem. And people are engaged and interacting with one another to solve it in ways that are self-directed, really, is the best way to put it. It isn't that you said, you solve this problem this way, go do it now. It is, here's the problem. We need to assemble the right kinds of people and have those people together determine how to solve the problem in the best way from their collective experience and to execute on it.
Agreed. And it was just wonderful having this all encapsulated in a game. And at the end, they were wrapping it up and, saying, you can take this forward. You can take this forward today. Put this into practice today. Here's some tips. They gave some stories. It was just tremendous. Fresh Biz, BIZ.com. I highly suggest checking it out.
Yeah, very cool stuff. I will have a look at it. And I can see where playing a game like this begins to really open people's minds to what are the possibilities and where can you go. I've seen some of this that begins to manifest itself in, some day job stuff for me in mobile transformation, where in order to reimagine work, you don't just say, oh, well, I use this spreadsheet all the time. If I could put that spreadsheet on my phone, now I'm going to be, an effective person. It's like, no, that's not it at all. It's, you have to think about right. what are the capabilities that your mobile devices now bring for you, right? You've got GPS, you've got a camera, you've got so many new capabilities at your disposal that if all you're doing is you're porting an existing application or business accelerator to a different platform, you're not really going to get what you need out of it. You have to think it through. And frankly, that's a game,
Exactly right. It is. You're absolutely right. Some other events coming up is in mid-May. All of the big, or right, many of the big biopharma companies, heads of R&D, will be at a summit, a think tank summit called PRISM, out in Basel, Switzerland. And they have asked for a keynote on serious games. And I asked them, I said, why? I know nothing about biopharma, next to nothing. I said, why do you want a keynote on serious games? And they said, well, one of the business models which we're all embracing right now in earnest is patient engagement. So we're looking at ways in which not only to use games as a way to fostering a closer tie to our patients, but also being able to use games as a means of transforming culturally our organizations, whether it's our leadership models, assessments, logistics, coming up with new innovations. So this was really cool. I'm really excited about it.
Well, and this is exactly why you are such the perfect person for this, Phaedra, too, is that you don't need to be a detailed pharma person, but this is a cultural change element that says we're placing a premium on collaboration and making those connections and making the network work to get things done in ways that perhaps it wasn't happening before. You know, everyone holding their action cards up to their chest and not sharing them. That's what people tend to do, right?
Yeah, very true. That's what they tend to do. So that will be a lot of fun. And I'm going to be visiting with some friends while I'm out there too. So that will be great. I'm looking forward to it. And then in July is the big Serious Play Summit. This year it's going to be out at Carnegie Mellon. And it's hosted by the Ernest Sue Boley, who's sort of the Serious Games Queen, and she runs the summit every year. She leads the Serious Games Association. So that will be tremendously fun. I don't think I'll be able to go, but Porter Stowell will, of course, my colleague, he'll be there representing and talking with a lot of the other folks who will be there. So we're pretty psyched about that. And shortly after then is the big SimTech conference in Australia in Adelaide. And that's in mid-August. And this covers across industry, both serious games, gamification, simulation. I'll be hosting a big master class out there. I'll be going to, Melbourne and Canberra and Adelaide. It's just going to be this tour of Australia while I'm out there. So I'm super psyched about that too. Should be fun.
That sounds like it'll be great. I've always wanted to get to Australia myself, so I'm kind of jealous. That should be a wonderful opportunity.
That would be great. We got to figure out how to make it happen, Michael.
Ooh, yeah, well, then maybe that's an idea too. Hey, you know, but before we wrap up for today, I've been seeing such the resurgence in social media on the concepts of virtual worlds. And gosh, you know, this is one of the things that got us really cranked up and started and excited about all these ideas already years ago. And with elements like the PlayStation environment kind of getting quieter and disappearing, and with Second Life slowly getting quieter and not quite disappearing, you know, but there are things that were very much on the downswing. It seems like all of a sudden, within the last 2 months or so, stuff is firing on multiple cylinders, and it's making the connections with augmented reality again, which is something we saw for sure. The magic experience that we've talked about on the show not that long ago, and more. And I'm wondering, based on the GDC and South by Southwest and all the elements that conferences you've been to in the recent couple of months, are you seeing and hearing the same thing? And what's different this time in your perspective?
I had a very interesting conversation actually yesterday with a UNC professor of public policy whose job it was to do a review of serious games that have been developed on augmented reality and on virtual reality, the headgear in particular. She wanted to do a survey with her class to see, you know, what was out there, and in particular to ask the question, does this medium help teach with this game, right? Is this game designed to actually help transmit a message in a way that is better than other traditional means? And what she found, I mean, she ended up reviewing just a ton of games. I don't remember the exact number, but I remember when she told me, I was surprised that there were that many out there. But what she told me was that similar to how a lot of learning applications immediately migrated to 3D when it was certainly likely not necessary. Right. Same sort of thing has happened with augmented reality, is that they chose this medium because they thought it would be cool, but they didn't think through how to actually leverage its power in order to relay something in a fresh way. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say?
I think so, but I need a practical example.
Okay. So, for example, she mentioned a math game where you had to go up to different QR codes and scan them in order to do math. But she said that the way that she said the use of the augmented reality didn't dive deeper into helping relay the math concepts. You didn't even use the space around you, like different walls around you to be different screens, to show different characteristics of math. It was a much too simple rendition for something that could have been much, much more powerfully used.
Okay.
It's okay. kind of like when we've had people who've said, I want to use a game just like World of Warcraft to teach database administration.
Right.
It's kind of like jumping to that. Like, I want something because this is really cool and, different, but you're not thinking through how the experience can actually help you relay new concepts in a more effective way.
So let me compare and contrast that a little bit with examples like DragonBox, right? Because this was, in my mind, a really clever way of getting kids to drink their Ovaltine, to learn more about math concepts and some of the more abstract ideas of algebraic equations and solving them, but doing so not necessarily with numbers, but with shapes and with balancing that made sense, which taught the algebraic concepts without saying, and here we are now going to do this particular technique, this particular method. If I relate that into the augmented reality, 3D internet, virtual universe sort of structure, I could see where there could be similar Dragon Box type examples where, because you're able to be immersed in the environment, you might actually be learning and interacting in a way that does not smack you across the forehead with a 2x4 saying, I'm teaching you how to change exhaust system on a diesel engine, which you only knew how to do a gasoline one, and these are the differences,
Right. No, I think that's a very good point. So it was interesting to see. I heard another talk about augmented reality that was talking about its use by defense. And the presenter was certainly advocating and saying, we need defense needs to pay attention to augmented reality as a means to better train soldiers. And I remember thinking as he was presenting that we still need to focus on systems and how to make systems better. I'm worried when they're saying augmented reality to train soldiers that they're still thinking first person, like first person shooter, versus collaborative design and optimization. And I'm just not seeing enough of those examples. I think there's a great opportunity out in the market to really be much more clever about this than just, here's a cool new first person mechanism to visualize something from an avatar. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And I think when we look at popular culture and we think about like the Terminator movies and we envision that's what augmented reality begins to look like, where you get information about what you're looking at. You've got a targeting system. You identify threats or non-threats. I'm with you. And my way of maybe taking this in a slightly different direction that you just described would be that it's not necessarily just a targeting system. It could very well be a peripheral awareness system of what do I have around me that can be helpful for me to solve a problem that I'm encountering, or I might encounter, or maybe I won't encounter because I don't even need to think about it at all. And that is now not on my peripheral awareness, but it's actively helping me do what it believes I need to do. So, if I'm in an environment where I might want to play some music, it might help me identify that there's musical instruments around me that perhaps I didn't see, or that there's people who are talented singers that I didn't know. You know, my wife showed me something recently about in Carrboro, they have something called the pop-up chorus. I don't know if you've heard of this sort of a concept before, but it's almost like a flash mobby sort of thing, except that there is a time and date that's selected and the music is selected. They vote it. But then they come together and sing a song or two, and then they disband again, and they'll reconvene in a different group with different people, whoever's available to do another couple of songs. So those have game elements to them. They have potential for augmented reality. I don't know. These are just some things that I'm mulling about in my own mind.
It will be interesting to watch this space and see how it grows. That's for certain.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I know we're out of time. So a good half hour with us to kind of kick around a few of these ideas and all these conferences that we are going to, Phaedra. So we're looking forward to hearing about the ones that are coming up, PRISM and the Carnegie Mellon Serious Play and more. So thank you very much, dear audience, for sticking with us. And we hope that you will come back to us, ask us questions, maybe pose an idea or two that should show up in one of these upcoming conferences. And you can find us on all of our usual signals and channels.
Thank you. And thanks for tuning in. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds great. See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.